Now, Ask Dr. Love with psychotherapist, author, love and relationship expert, Dr. Jamie Turndorf. For expert advice on love and relationships, you can submit your questions online at AskDrLove.com or post comments and questions to Dr. Love while you're watching live over Google Hangouts or YouTube. Now, here's Dr. Love.
Welcome to Ask Dr. Love Radio. I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf, and it's my pleasure to be with you today. Welcome back after the New Year break. Happy New Year to everyone. And today I'm so excited because I have my new friends, Damian Brinkley and my lovely, lovely Catherine Brinkley. And we're going to be talking about something really interesting. But let me first give you a little bit about the bio, okay? And Dawson, I'm losing my marbles. I think I've been on vacation for too long, and I think that I need to have my head examined. So I have your bios, and I close the phone. Do you see what happens when you don't have me on every minute? I lose it. I completely lose it. So Damian Brinkley is an award-winning author. And you guys, he was on my show a couple of weeks ago, and we had such a great time. And Damian and Catherine Brinkley are best-selling authors. They're lecturers. They're spiritual teachers. They've survived, both of them have survived a near-death experience. And in 1994, as Damian's first New York Times bestseller, Saved by the Light, was being published, Catherine was leaving her footprint in the literary world as the author of Jewels for the Soul, Affirmations from the Heart. And at the same time, she was a cutting-edge journalist with the very popular column Conversations with Catherine. And that was dedicated to in-depth interviews with the world's leaders in global spiritual consciousness. And Catherine went on to produce a radio show designed around those interviews. And it was during that time that she conducted a telephone interview with Damian to promote his runaway bestseller. And then following the interview for his second book, At Peace in the Light, as their date with destiny, it eventually led them to marriage. And although previously a confirmed bachelor, Damian's enthusiastically taken on the responsibility of step-parenting Catherine's six kids. And in 2004, together, Damian and Catherine authored Secrets of the Light, Lessons from Heaven. And in 2008, Harper One, San Francisco, republished the book under the name In Secrets of the Light. Damian and Catherine explain what they call the fourfold path to spiritual enlightenment, along with an explanation of how to live this life in a way that will benefit you in the afterlife. And currently they're working on their next co-authored book, 10 Things to Know Before You Go. What a great title. So today the couple is devoted to working ceaselessly to champion the virtues of spiritual values in our daily life. And they guide people through the Twilight Brigade, their nonprofit organization dedicated to training volunteers to be at the bedside of our American veterans in transition from this world to the next. And Damian has been a hospice volunteer for 37 years and has more than 32,000 hours at the bedside. And through this important work that they do, as well as their books, their articles, their lectures, their workshops, radio and TV shows, and tours to sacred sites around the world, Damian and Catherine are undaunted in their commitment to creating a higher consciousness of support and acceptance for the circle of life. Doesn't that sound wonderful? We don't even need to talk anymore because that bio says it all. Are you guys here with me or did I put you to sleep?
No, but I am tired. We're doing a lot in this world, and thank you so much for having us on with you today, Jamie.
Absolutely.
Oh, I love, you know, we just connected. We are just old, yes. Old soulmates and soul twins. We connected even before we met. We were connected, and then it was just like an instant hit the ground running feeling.
Yes,
and you're also wonderful. Cool.
And you're cool. Forget all that spiritual mumbo jumbo. You're cool.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. So, you know, what we're talking about today is how relationships help us grow and complete ourselves through the gift of giving and receiving love, which is essentially, you know, what I talk about in Love Never Dies. We're put here to perfect our ability to love ourselves and others fully. And relationships are love's training ground. They're our love lab. So that's what your work is all about. But of course, Dr. Love wants to hear, I want to hear all about your love story. I want to start with that. How did, you know, I know you guys met during the interview, but how did it go from there? How did you realize that you were in love? And
oh, I knew I was in love. It was love at first sound, but
oh my.
It took 2 years before I ever laid eyes on her. But here's my point, Jamie. You know, when Saved came out, it sold millions and millions and millions of books, and radio shows were like every day. They would be 2, 3, 4, 5 a day.
Yeah.
And I would go sit in a studio, and I would be on television. They would just slot me in on segments on television shows. I was in one place, but it would appear like I was in 100 places.
Yeah.
And so I would just listen, and most people never read the book. Most people were afraid of death. I mean, it's like a taboo. And
yeah.
So I would sit back, and I would listen. And in the first 30 seconds, I knew the next 20 questions. Whatever they were going to ask, I knew what they were going to ask, and I knew basically by then how stupid it was going to be, and how people were going to avoid, and how most people, even though they had to put the book on, they were skeptical, a lot of religious viewpoints, a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So here comes this next interview. And I sit in in Aiken, I have a chair called the rocket ship, like a recliner that rolls you back and heat and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting in the rocket ship, and here comes, and this lady comes on. She says, "Mr. Brinkley, are you ready for your interview?" "Yes." She asked really good questions, and they were in depth and thought through. And all of a sudden, out of a 500 radio shows, here came someone that not only was interested in the book, had really, really good questions that made me have to think of the answers instead of pad answers, not realizing then that she had had one of these experiences herself, which a lot of times when people get a chance to talk to me, I have such a range in it because of going through it 3 times. I have such a range in it, and I have an understanding about it, and it was wonderful. And I thought about her for the next year until At Peace came out, and here we go again, and then we had a chance to meet. And it was, I think she proposed marriage in the second interview.
Oh, Catherine, I love a girl who goes balls out.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. Because I was already.
Oh my
married,
God, you were when you proposed to him in the second interview, you were being tongue in cheek because you were just saying how connected you felt.
Yes, you know, for me that story goes a little bit further back because that was 1994 when we did the first interview. And as Danyon said, I had a near-death experience of my own, but I'd never talked to anybody about it. So the chance to talk to him, and as I was reading the galley, preparing for the interview, I knew, Jamie, that I knew this person. I knew I never met him, but I knew his soul. So it was so interesting. But what had happened in 1993, a year before his book came out, is a girlfriend had sent me a videotape.
Danyon Does Dallas.
Yeah, well, it wasn't called Danyon Does Dallas. But that's
and then that's another movie, and that's X-rated.
Where he was giving a lecture on his near-death experience, and where was it, honey, Dallas or
Dallas.
Austin? Okay, Dallas. And my girlfriend lived in Washington. I was living in outside of Reno, and she said, "Catherine, I'm sending you something. You've got to watch this. Every time I watch this man speak, I think of you. There's some connection between you and this guy."
And she knew it too?
She felt it, and so she sent it, and I really honestly didn't pay that much attention to Danyon as a person, but his story was so incredible. I made everyone in my family watch that video. I had the mailman, the Schwann man, everybody coming in to watch this. It was just fabulous. So a year later, I'm working for the Spiritual Magazine, and my editor says, "The Whole Life Expo is coming to Vegas, and you can interview anybody you want." So she started going down the list, Deepak, Wayne Dyer, Terry Cole Whitaker, Danyon Brinkley. Danyon Brinkley? Oh, I've got to interview him. And she said to me, "Catherine, what the hell is a Danyon Brinkley?" Because she'd never heard of him. And I said, "I didn't show you the tape? Oh, you're going to love this guy." And so then I got the galley from his manager or his from his publisher, and I read the book, and I was in tears. It was like I had this personal reunion with somebody that I knew I loved and had known intimately.
Yeah, that's the part I liked.
You felt you both, well, when you have that kind of soul twin, soul connection experience, you both know it.
Yeah, we knew
it. It's not that one knows it. There's that recognition on both sides. Yeah.
We knew it. We talked for a long time, and I was really, really sad to end the conversation. The article turned out beautifully. It was one of the most popular ones that we did in the magazine. And then a year later, I got to meet him, and I honestly believed that when I met him, it was because he wasn't going to be with us much longer. In the early days, Danyon often talked about, you know, leaving the planet before long, and that he was happy and looking forward to it. So I thought, well, gosh, I better go to Vegas and meet this man, because we had such a connection, and I wasn't thinking romantically, just a connection.
Right.
And then tell Jamie about what happened the day we met at McCarran Airport, honey.
Oh, I can't tell her that.
Oh, yes, you can.
Oh, come on. I love the wild stories.
Well, the story was, I couldn't wait. I was excited. You know, here was another one of these things, and I was traveling probably 300 days a year.
Right.
And it was just another one of these things that you say the same thing, struck by lightning,
mm-hmm.
hit the side of the head, went down my spine, blah, 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 blah.
Don't make me relive my near-death experience and go over the gory details again.
8 million times. And so I was excited because I was going to meet the person behind this magnificent voice.
She has a great voice. Love her voice.
Please. And so I came in through the airport, and I came to the place we're supposed to meet, and there was a person standing there that I thought was Catherine. Well, she didn't look anything like I thought Catherine should look with that voice, and I won't say that she was a stunner, but I was quite depressed. I walked up to her, and I said, "Catherine," she said, "No," and then she told me her name, and then she pointed at the top of the escalator in McCarran, and there was the most beautiful, gorgeous creature I had ever seen in my life. And that was it.
Oh, and that was Catherine.
And I was looking down, and I saw my friend talking to Danyon. And honestly, I had never put it together that he was this Adonis, you know, 6'3", gorgeous. And I'm coming down the escalator, and I'm looking over there, and I thought to myself, oh, my God. I am in so much trouble now.
We got a soul connection and sexual attraction.
Now it's on, okay?
You know, it reminds me of the movie Arthur. Remember Arthur, the confirmed bachelor, falls in love, and he doesn't know what to do with himself. He's in love with Liza Minnelli's character, and he goes to buy flowers, and he's at the flower shop, and there's this little old Jewish guy, and he's asking him, "How did you know? Have you ever been in love? How'd you know?" And he says to the florist, "You know, did you whistle a lot?" And the old guy says, "I whistled." And then he says, "Did you sing?" He says, "I sang." He says, "Did you feel sick to your stomach?" And he says, "No, maybe you got a bug."
Well, it was incredible because I stepped off that escalator and started to walk towards Danyon. And just like I've seen in movies, everything else faded to black.
Oh, yeah. The slow motion.
Yes. And I just felt this tidal wave of love reaching out to me from him. And I felt, I'm home. That's all.
Oh, my. How very similar your experience is to my experience with Jean. That's probably why we also connected, because we sort of, I think we're in a soul tribe of people who have been together before, and our souls recognize each other. And it was the same, very much the same with Jean. I had seen him as a premonition, as you know, and then when I met him, I had an out-of-body experience, you know? And it was very similar. So when you guys had this instant cataclysmic meeting, oh, wait a minute, can you believe I have to take a break?
I
know it's going to happen. We're going to be talking 10 hours, and I'll forget my breaks. I'm going to take a quick break, and I'll be back with you in a moment on Ask Dr. Love Radio.
Dr. Love's Quickies.
Wondering how to tell the difference between love and lust? Poor Mark. Every time he takes a woman to bed, he ends up scratching his head. His big head, I mean. How can he tell if he's in love or only in lust? Time. Lust usually fades in a few weeks while true love lasts. So when it comes to gauging if you're in love or only in lust, remember, you can't trust lust. I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf of AskDrLove.com.
You are listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. Ask Dr. Love is the web's premier relationship advice site since 1996. Visit AskDrLove.com to search thousands of free relationship advice articles on any relationship issue you may have, or submit a question to her free advice column. You can also watch this broadcast live over Google Hangouts or YouTube. Sign up for her newsletter at AskDrLove.com to be the first to know about her upcoming radio shows. And find out how you can watch her live and ask her questions in real time. Don't be shy. Dr. Turndorf wants to help you. So take advantage of this unique opportunity to get a personal answer from one of today's most respected experts. This show is for you, the listeners. So if you have a question for her, make sure to watch live on Tuesdays from 1 to 2 Eastern Time on Google Hangouts or YouTube. Or catch the archived broadcast on WebTalkRadio.net. Now, back to Dr. Love.
You're listening to Ask Dr. Love Radio with Dr. Jamie Turndorf, and I'm talking with my wonderful guests, Danyon and Catherine Brinkley. And right before we took the break, and this is my Dr. Love's quickie segment, so we got 6 minutes to get in and out, and I think it fits with the fact that you guys were instantly struck, really, by a bolt of lightning. It was really love at first, voice, and then sight. So what happened after the two of you looked at each other and you felt all this love pouring from Danyon to you? What happened then?
Well,
I felt the same thing, though, Jamie. I mean,
I know
what she's describing. I felt the same thing, and you know, I was a bachelor. I mean, I had my own little world that I ruled, you know, with all my little quirks.
Yeah. How old were you, Danyon?
I was 50.
No, you were 44 when we met.
I was how old?
Isn't that fantastic?
You were 44 when we met.
Because Danyon, you were waiting for her. You weren't a confirmed bachelor. You were just a confirmed bachelor with regard to everybody else.
No, I would have to agree, but
I like that.
It was
you were just waiting for her to appear.
It was that moment, and it has endured now 20 years.
Because it was meant. You were meant. The same way that I waited for Jean. You know, I just didn't date. It was very unusual, you know, to come through the era I did at Vassar College. Everybody was screwing anything, you know. And I just said, I'm going to wait till he appears, you know.
Well, Danyon wasn't waiting for me in celibacy, for sure. And
okay.
I had been married and with six children.
And you had children.
So I think it was
children.
Amazing. Six children, yes.
I went from king of the world, had everything, owned everything, couldn't tell me anything, too. It's your turn to take the trash out, and I need $20.
So I want to tell you something. Why we decided to do this show and have Catherine come back was because we were talking when you were a guest on my show a little while ago, and you made some comment about how she's changed your world, that the love of Catherine and your loving her made you into a better man, a more spiritual man, a more evolved man. And this is no joke. This is what love does for a man.
Oh, yeah, and I highly recommend it for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Lust is a wonderful thing. I have a little experience in lusting.
Did you say lust?
Lust, absolutely.
Did you notice, Catherine, I'm going to the lofty, you know, love changes a man, and he just answers lust, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but it's how the difference. I mean, I understand lust as a force, but love is a power that's so deep and so evolving and so changing. And yes, it requires work because I have to put up what I fell in love with was a whole herd. But the relationship has kept evolving, and
mm-hmm.
it keeps evolving to what we write. And like last night, I had to come in and we were doing press releases for another show, which was not my responsibility, but I came in last night at like 9 o'clock, and she was tired, but she's a master wordsmith, and I said, Kat, I have to correct these things and get them back out because the madness that's going on in the programming, it'll never get done. And we sat right down. The computer blew out. We sat right down on the laptop, and we knocked it out. You know, we knocked it out. We looked at each other, which would normally take forever. We had done both of them in a few minutes. We smiled, went and watched two episodes of House of Cards.
That's so fun, because you, the two of you, the sum is greater than the individual parts. When you work together, it's so synergistic. So what would you say, because we have 2 minutes left in my quickie segment, one quick little tip that you think is the secret to keeping your love so fresh and new?
We've got 2 minutes. I think for us, the biggest thing, the most important thing, is that we are so very different. Opposites truly did attract here. Yet we love and respect one another so much that we encourage one another to be who we are and to be the greatest at what we do.
That is so brilliant what you're saying.
Yeah,
that is so brilliant, because the very thing that takes most couples down, that they do not accept each other's differences, you both champion and embrace the differences.
And have conversations with each other. Sit down and talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
This was the thing that was the hardest for me, Jamie. I didn't listen to anything. You know, I didn't care. And my basic personality changed a lot after the near-death experience. It means I had eliminated hate and a lot of other things from my psychology, but and I'm very secretive, you know, she gets on to me about this. She says, you have so many secrets, but for me, it's not secretive, it's in nature. And yet to sit down and in the evening have conversations and talk over perspectives, and to get her perspective on things that I have already decided what I was going to do, and to hear those perspectives and then to change my mind and see that it works better. Couples need to talk, and if they're talking about it, they see different viewpoints of something that individually is happening to them.
Because do you hear what you're saying? I'm not married to a position. I'm married to Catherine, and I want to hear what she has to say, and I want to take in her thoughts and feelings. That's what I'm married to, not my idea, my stance. Let me take a brief break, and I'll be back. We can continue in a moment on Ask Dr. Love Radio.
You are listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. If you yearn to get along better with your life partner or spouse, friends, family members, and even coworkers, Dr. Love's latest Hay House book, Kiss Your Fights Goodbye, Dr. Love's 10 Simple Steps to Cooling Conflict and Rekindling Your Relationship, shows you how to turn conflict into connection for a lifetime of lasting love. Find out more about this book and even read a free excerpt by visiting AskDrLove.com. This is Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. And if you have a question for her, make sure to watch live over Google Hangouts or YouTube, where you can submit your comments or questions and connect with Dr. Love in real time. Or listen to the archived show at webtalkradio.net. This show is for you, the listeners, and Dr. Love wants to hear from you. You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. Once again, here's Dr. Love.
Welcome back to Ask Dr. Love Radio. I'm talking with Danyon and Catherine, Catherine and Danyon Brinkley. So we're talking about seeking input, listening to your partner, and that you guys do this every day.
Yes, it's something that we've learned to do. In the beginning, it was very difficult because, as Danyon said, he's very secretive. He's Southern. And on top of that kind of mindset, cultural mindset, he was also in the military.
So, you know, don't ask, him, don't tell.
Yeah, it's like, where are you going? Well, if I tell you, I'll have to kill you.
Or like the other, I got to go see a man about a horse.
Yeah, where are you going, honey? I have to see a man about a horse. And this just didn't bode well with me. It was like, no, we're in a sacred relationship. You don't give those kinds of answers. So
mm-hmm.
it took years for mm-hmm. him to, I'm going to just say this, to trust me enough to be honest with me. And I think that as the years have gone by, we've gotten so much better at this. And now we have a level of honesty and truth and consciousness that all relationships need and twin souls demand.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to throw something out, which is something Freud said. And this is, I'm sure, going to be very controversial. I'll get hate mail over this. But Freud said that it is not natural for men to give up their independence and their freedom. That it, by nature, men are more naturally self-sufficient and independent. And that kind of fits with what you're talking about with Danyon. I don't need to talk about it. I don't need to tell you. I don't need to discuss it. And if I talk to you, it feels like I'm asking your permission and I'm independent, all of this. And that is why Freud was saying it's not natural for guys to really want to settle down and marry, because they know deep down that to do so and have a happy marriage or a committed relationship means that you have to subjugate your ego to that of your partner, meaning she has to feel she comes ahead of you. And if you don't give her that feeling, if it feels like you're a lone wolf and you come first, you're not going to have a happy relationship. So, Danyon, what you got slapped upside the head with your near-death experiences, and that kind of cracked you open and you became more open. And then through the love, it just eroded any of those walls that you had, so that you were more and more willing to just say, listen, she comes first. I'm going to listen to her. I'm going to talk to her. I'm not going to be a lone wolf. And you've made subjugating your ego to her really a religion. I listen to you. She knows better. She knows right. And you do it. I mean, this is the greatest strength of all, that you just do it naturally now.
What she has is a caring point of view. I came up tough. I mean, I served in the military, and I worked in various areas of expertise in stemming, quote unquote, the red tide. But what I learned about is this: when you can bounce something off of someone, you bounce it off, it becomes kinder and more gentler and more appreciative. Whereas mine is to the point to get the deal done. I don't want to hear it, okay? But if I run it by her, then I hear, and this is where guys making a mistake. Women are smarter and more sensitive than we are. And if you listen to their side of the same argument, you increase your ability to achieve the goal. You find a softer, more respectful, and appreciative point. And you can use it or not use it, but you'll be amazed at how that conversation affects how you deal with other people. And
right, because women are more, tend to be more emotional, more about the being relational. These are generalizations, and guys tend to be more goal-oriented and get the job done and not thinking about feelings. So when you take the woman's perspective into it, it's a softening, it's like what Ignatius of Loyola said. He was the founder of the Jesuit order. He said, when dealing with others, you want to enter through their door, but have them leave through yours.
Oh, I love that.
All right, but I remember this now, based on that Freudian piece that you just had.
Yeah. So
based on that, I would have to say, based on being a Freudian perspective, all men are improperly potty trained.
Wait a minute. I was going to say it's time to go to the bed. No, we don't. We still have 10 minutes. You've got to hold it, Danyon.
Remember that was Freudian's big thing about proper.
Well, that you weren't toilet trained right. There's always something wrong. You know, mother is a four-letter word, right?
Yeah, that was Freudian's big point. So guys are basically improperly potty trained.
Yeah. It's just all.
But Jamie, conversations about other people's point of view and a conversation that you appreciate. You watch action.
The idea of what we're talking about here is the more evolved we are, the more you're interested in hearing the other person's perspective, because listening and understanding is love in action, isn't it? Let me listen to you. Let me understand you. I'm loving you.
Mm-hmm. And Danyon knows whenever he comes to me, no matter what the question, love is the answer.
Yeah.
That's it. We mm-hmm. have to figure out a way to make that other person feel loved. And as you said, Jimmy, that's being listened to, heard.
It's so true. What'd you say, Catherine? No, I wasn't listening. No.
And another thing that is so important in our relationship, as I said earlier, this was a true case of opposites attracting.
Yeah.
So for Danyon, he was brutish and he was narcissistic and he was a globe-trotting playboy. All those
yeah.
things. And very proud of it, right? Very proud of it. And here I was, you know, a devoted mother and a, you know, a spiritual leader in my own way. And when we came together, I did soften him, and I did help him to see and to be more sensitive to the feelings of others. But he also helped me to be more assertive and perhaps, you know, to think of myself, because with six children, I was number seven. He teases about being number seven. He became number eight.
Yeah, really?
I always put the children first. And he helped me to see where that wasn't always the best thing for me.
Or me.
Definitely not for him.
Okay, and we're going to have a fight now? Okay. So I want to know, this is really cool. Did you know, did you guys realize the differences early on, and was that, did that give you guys pause? Did you think, wow, we're so different, maybe we can't make this relationship work?
Oh, sure. I'm sure we both had those thoughts from time to time, but the love was so compelling, we couldn't stay apart for long.
No.
You know, but sure, I mean, you've got to give kudos to a man who's never raised children, takes on five girls and a boy.
But you realize he took you on because of his love for you. Whatever goes with you, he has to love because they're an extension of you.
And every man should understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, like you see so many, we hear so many conversations, especially among young people whose first time didn't work, you know, with 50% of all marriages end in divorce and 70% of all second marriages end in a divorce. Well, what's wrong? It's money and children. And so what guys have to understand, they have to really understand, this is if there is a woman that you care about or you're falling in love with and she has a child, and if you think that that is going to be a hindrance to you, that makes you a fool. It's only going to make you grow. It's only going to help you see more, achieve more responsibility. But at that same time, if you're talking to each other, it's going to make you more successful. And men need to be successful in their own minds. And if that comes from meeting someone who has a couple of kids or one child or six kids, that in itself is a driver to motivate you to be inspired to achieve higher goals, not something that's a detriment. And it in the early days of that, you know, in the early days, I had that little resentment, and it wasn't all about me. And then I learned to appreciate her viewpoint. She's like a sap. I mean, she gives them everything in the world, or everything's all about them. And being able to intercede in certain points and look at that perspective, I not only was helping, I believed I was helping her own her life again as they grew older,
mm-hmm.
but it also was helping me see that I can't be as hard or as tough are as direct,
unyielding
as my personality is. You know, I'm very, I have survived and raised myself from the dead with no chance any of the three times of surviving. I mean, no one gave me a chance. The last one was less than 10% chance of survival. So I have a system that if my way works, that I can raise myself from the dead, then everybody should listen to me. But instead, Kat and the kids have tempered that. Well, they're all adults now, have tempered that to where now I put up and carry fools.
Well, this was the thing that I think he learned, that all those things he learned about being the tough guy and not listening to anybody was fine in the world out there. That's how he survived. That's how he was successful. But inside these walls, this is the house that love built. And this is where, you know, we are in sacred space,
mm-hmm.
caring for one another and loving one another and listening to one another is the number one rule.
And absolutely.
So for him
absolutely.
To be able to differentiate the two was very difficult, but he has done it very well.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because, you know, people will come to me for couples therapy or marriage counseling, and they're wondering why they're in such hell. And if you listen to the way they speak to each other, this is not a sacred space. They're abusing each other. They're criticizing each other. They're verbally bashing each other. So you wonder why you're in distress. And the concept of you must only speak in a loving way, create a safe space, no attacks, no criticisms. This is a concept that is very alien for most couples. They don't understand that. I had a couple come to me, and they had been in couples therapy before, and they were used to the therapist taking turns. Half the session you beat on him, half the session you beat on her. That's couples therapy. So I told them, we're not going to do that in my session. And then they start doing their thing, pounding on each other verbally. And I just said, listen, you can go home and do this for free. You know, save your money. Yeah, in here, we don't do that. Where did you ever get the idea you're allowed to abuse each other and disrespect each other? And they both blinked like water was being splashed on their faces. Like, that's a concept. I never heard of that. So just that changed everything. They quit. I never saw them again. And about 2 years later, I'm walking in the jewelry district in New York City, and the woman just walks up to me. It was not a coincidence, as we know. It's just spirit being anonymous. But she walks up to me. She says, I want you to know, from that day on, when you pointed out to us, we're not allowed to talk this way, we changed, and we've been happy ever since.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
But it's also, it's easy to hear this, Jamie. I mean, because what happens is he's not listening to her. Okay, it's so easy. She needs, and this is something I learned from Kat, a lot of times it doesn't really matter.
It never matters. The details don't matter. If you feel it's my emotional reality, it's not wrong or right, this isn't a court of law, just understand me and my reality.
And listen to me, so we created executive privilege because we have a place where if it's that important to her, when it doesn't, most things don't faze me.
Right.
If it's that important to her, then I can be arguing with it, okay, and I can be arguing with it because I don't want to hear it or whatever it is, and she can say executive privilege, and I sit down and I stop and I listen. And it's grown into a place where now I listen more because I don't really get, I care about people with 6 months or less, and this is a big thing that she says, because I get involved with people in crisis, grief, or bereavement, and when you have 6 months or less, you have my undivided attention, and this is a Kat quote. She says, he only likes dying people because he doesn't have to like them very long.
That's a good one. But where I thought you were going was, when you're in the presence of this kind of death transition, you realize that the stuff we worry about doesn't matter.
And the art of the bedside is the art of listening.
Listening.
A person in transition needs three things. Number one, that their life has value. And the fact that you're there and you're listening. Second, an art form of transition, you know, a method by which they pass. This is what we teach in the Twilight Brigade. And third, permission. Permission is that you say it's going to be okay and it's okay to go and it's safe, but also trying to create a place of co-responsibility to bring out of them what they feel like the issues that they've never settled.
That's lovely.
That's learning to listen and being present in their conversation. So most people just need to hear themselves talk through it, and you're just there. And as they talk, they work themselves through it. And
that is so true, just to really just be there as a witness and to listen. So I'm just going to take a break, and I'll be back in a moment.
Dr. Love's Quickies.
Mary's about ready to give love the shove, because no matter what she tries, men don't know that she's alive. To turn guys on, Mary needs to turn on what I call green lights, nonverbal signals that let a guy know you're ready to go. Most guys won't approach a woman unless they're sure to not be rejected. So ladies, if you want to kick your love life into high gear, make your signals clear. Turn on those green lights and flash your pearly whites. I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf of AskDrLove.com.
You are listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. To submit your questions to Dr. Turndorf live on the air, sign up for her free newsletter at AskDrLove.com and get the details on how you can connect with her on Google Hangouts or YouTube during her live broadcasts. Or listen to the archived show at WebTalkRadio.net. If you've recently been through a breakup and are looking for a second chance, wondering how you can reconcile with your ex or if it's even possible after all you've been through, Dr. Love's book, Make Up, Don't Break Up, presents her proven 5-step plan for reconciling with your ex. This plan was developed over years of research, working with thousands of couples at our Center for Emotional Communication. This is a proven, no-hype, no-nonsense method that gets right to the root of the problem and shows you how to reignite the spark and rekindle your love. For more about Makeup Don't Break Up, visit AskDrLove.com. And now, back to Dr. Love.
Welcome back to Ask Dr. Love Radio. I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf. I'm talking with Danyon and Catherine Brinkley. We're talking about how our relationships help us grow and complete ourselves through the gift of giving and receiving love. So here we are in the final segment of the show. Tell me what you guys feel is the secret to your success in the blended family, because that often takes a relationship to its knees.
Oh, absolutely. It can. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, years ago, Jamie, when I was in the middle of doing conversations with Catherine, I was lucky enough to be able to pick the people that I interviewed. And one Mother's Day, or for the Mother's Day edition of the paper, I chose Dr. Leo Buscaglia. Do you remember Dr. Love?
Yeah.
Oh, I just adored him. And truly, I felt he was one of my spiritual mentors. And I told him that having read his books changed the way I parented. And because he used to say that children needed at least 10 hugs a day.
Mm.
And they needed to be told every day that they were loved.
Mm-hmm.
And Danyon has confided in me that he didn't hear that from his father when he was a child.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of
people... Well, I didn't have it coming, though.
Oh, of course you
You did. Are just overly humble. Even difficult kids deserve it, you know?
Absolutely. And the more difficult they are, the more they need to hear it.
No kidding. So, if they heard it, they wouldn't be difficult,
yeah.
Right?
There you go.
I don't believe that.
There
either.
You go.
Oh, we're not going to accept it. It's not you.
It isn't true.
We're not listening to you.
True. Because that's why he chose me. I mean, I am the only nurturing mother.
Love Muffin.
Yeah, Love Muffin. Thank you, baby.
So, you are.
When I was interviewing Dr. Buscaglia, he was talking about, and this was back in the late 90s, he was talking about the blended family and how important it is, with one in every two marriages failing, that we learn to successfully blend all of the different traditions and needs of the blended family. And for us, especially with Danyon not having raised any children, when we blended our families, he was, I think it's fair to say, he was in culture shock.
Yeah.
He was raised, you know, in the South, in the time when children were seen and not heard. And so the fact that I would discuss everything with the kids, they were allowed to have an opinion about anything that was going on.
Oh, my God.
And he would just, he'd go crazy.
Yeah, they just knocked you across the room if you opened your mouth.
Exactly.
I was seen and not heard until the police got there.
Oh, honey.
Oh, I know.
I'm going to adopt this boy.
But he was Mama's favorite.
Yeah.
And
if that's a favorite, I would like to know what is a not favorite, you know?
So that part was hard for him, because I was raised in the same way. Children were seen and not heard. And I said, you know, the buck stops here. My children are going to know that they have value, and their opinion has meaning and weight in this family. So that was the hardest thing in blending our families, I think. Would you agree, Hen?
But it was also this, too. You grew up in the same type of structured family, the discipline. The father's word was the supreme law, and you abided by it.
Yes, I did.
I only abided by it until I got caught. And the only times I ever had problems with it was if I got caught. And since, you know, I grew up as a fighter and that kind of stuff, mine was the art of rebellion, whereas yours the art of participation and literally submission to it.
It's
quite different. But everybody has a different way of coming to understand who they are and how they're appreciated. And I went from knocking people out or shooting them to discovering that we are spiritual beings, with my motto that what's the purpose, when everybody says, what's the purpose of life?
Mm-hmm.
The purpose and the meaning of life is this: if God could not come today and God sent you, in the life you just reviewed, what difference did you and God make? And I can say that my relationship with Catherine and my relationship with these kids have definitely improved God's standing in the world of the difference that I have made.
So, and if you want to, you, because God lives in each one of us, we want to be really the living God, living Christ consciousness, right?
Well, that's the opportunity. If God could come today and God sent you, in the life you just reviewed, what difference did you and God make? And we created the Twilight Brigade. We work the Twilight Brigade. We support it. We're there mentally, physically, spiritually, financially.
And it's marvelous.
We watch the difference that we've affected in over the lives of 20,000 people who were.
And this is different than what hospice does. Your whole approach is different.
Completely different.
Right. And if somebody asked you how to describe the difference, could you give a little?
Very easily. Hospice is about taking care of the person. You know, what is their physical need, but from a compassionate way. What we are is caregivers. Like when someone is in transition, the person who loved them or been with them 40 or 50 years, a little bit of them are passing too. So what we are, the person that walks in the door that can sit down and say, okay, honey, you need to go get you some rest. You need to get your hair done, drink some liquor, whatever it takes to help you find comfort and solace. We can handle it. We can handle it. And someone being able to trust a Twilight Brigader, going to be able to trust someone so that they can take time to take care of themselves and take a look at themselves, because it usually doesn't hit the person till 2 weeks after the funeral that they're alone and the world disappears and all the potato salad's gone. So what we are is that compassionate. We follow up to see how they are, and we sit at that bedside. And a lot of times people cannot talk to the person they love because they see how much it pains them to realize that they're leaving. The other thing that gets me, Jamie, is when people say, hey, don't tell Mom that she's dying. Oh, no,
please.
We can't tell that. What is this? That's the stupidest crap. But the person in transition knows more about it than the
person's already halfway in the spirit realm anyhow, or more.
Being relatives? They're seeing relatives or angels or beings of light in the description, you know, and they know more about it than them, but this is all selfish control. But to help neutralize that place is what we try to do. And Kat has done an unbelievable job in the tempering of how the Twilight Brigade operates, and a more compassionate perspective about the people who have been trained. I am rather automaton about the process because I know what comes next. So there's nothing in the system that I don't understand. And she adds a kind of a spiritual point of view to it that I don't. She adds a spiritual perspective and kindness that I now do, but in the beginning did not.
You hear, Catherine, how often he credits the softer side of himself to you, his openness,
I'm truly touched by that. There's a line in the book that I wrote in Secrets of the Light, and we were talking about...
Who wrote?
I wrote this particular line
about,
sweetie.
Just checking.
All right, let's have a fight. Go ahead.
But I said we were talking about our relationship and how we met, and I said, neither one of us is perfect, but in that place where our hearts meet as one, there perfection lies.
That's beautiful. Is that what you refer to as the twin flames?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, that, and we know that people will ask Daniel, how long have you two been married? And he'll say, oh, about 3,000 years or 300 years.
300 years.
You know, we know that we've been together since before time.
Oh, yes, I know exactly that feeling. Yes, I know what you mean.
I know you do.
Yes, I do. It's funny because my husband would always give me love cards, you know, and it would depict us together at different eras. And I thought he was just being romantic. After he left his body, then I fully understood what he meant. We've always been together.
Yes.
Literally, at all those times.
And there's a knowing of each other and a sense of connection that no matter what you're going through, no matter how challenging the times, that connection cannot break. It
exactly.
cannot be broken.
So tell everybody, what would you say are the goals of your marriage?
The hot tub.
The hot tub at the end.
See,
of the
every
day.
Time I try to get all spiritual, he gets all horny. Have you noticed this?
I
talk love, he talks lust. He's just the most contrary fellow. I mean,
am I
talking to the big head or the little head here?
When you're talking to me, you're talking to both of them.
Yeah, that's true.
I know, you can't separate. This is a non-duality here.
But people don't understand. You have to have a ritual practice. I mean, yeah, if you don't create a ritual practice, where I call them ritual practices, like...
Including the hot tub.
Oh, that's every day we turn the darn thing on. But it's about relaxing and talking and being outside. Ours is outside. And to let that hot water in. I think everybody in the world needs a hot tub. And that they take the time to get in. It's a part of a tradition or a ritual practice that you can't go to bed mad. You know, you got to figure out how to work through it, because that's going to mess up your travel into other dimensions.
Yeah.
You're focused on that, and people say, well, why not go to bed mad? Because they think of all that human kind of stuff. Well, we all travel, and we go into different arenas and different levels of consciousness, and I know this, but also quantum physics has validated it.
Yeah.
Going to bed angry is going to affect how you are in the other levels of consciousness that you're existing and living in. And I think going to bed angry is a bad, wrong thing to do, because you have other spiritual things and identities that evolve. But you know what? Love has so many facets to it. But if you have a ritual, and this is the one you follow, like I always say, the hot tub, because we sit on, she's on her corner and I'm on my corner, and that water is hot and the muscles are relaxing and we're talking, and we usually drink a glass of wine and we talk through the day. We sleep better, and that mood comes, or sometimes it doesn't. But it's a place that ritual's in place, you know, and that no matter what's going on, you have this thing, whoever gets the towels or, you know, that kind of stuff. People need to find and put in their life, just like eating their breakfast or their lunch or dinner, they need to put these kinds of things in place in their life, because when it's the ritual and the tradition, you follow that as opposed to what kind of pissy mood you might be in.
I like that. It's sort of a structure that you can stick to. So in the last couple of minutes, I want everybody to know how to find you, right?
Okay.
What you'd like to promote right now other than the Twilight Brigade. Anything that we can share that will support you in your ministry.
Yes. Well, Danyon is going to be at the Conscious Life Expo in L.A. at the Hilton LAX?
Yeah, the Hilton LAX.
I don't have the date in front of me. I believe it's the first weekend in February. That's his first outing for the year, and we are definitely working on 10 things to know before you go. So hopefully that will be out in the fall.
Oh, gosh, that's great. And any up-to-date information can be found at your website, right?
Absolutely. They can look into the Twilight Brigade at thetwilightbrigade.org and find out any information about Danyon and I at danyon.com.
And we have a lot of stuff throughout the year, Jamie. I mean, you know, we're always getting into all kinds of trouble. Either we're going to Teotihuacan or wherever it is, in Peru or Mexico or who knows. But you know what? I want everybody to do this. Take time to, when you're not with your partner and you're going through your day, take time to think about them. Stop for a moment and find something about them that you appreciate when you're not with them, okay? Because what happens then is when you get to see them in your consciousness, that moment of appreciation during the day helps when you meet them, no matter what kind of day it is, if she's having a bad day or if mine didn't go so well or if theirs didn't go so well. If you're thinking about each other through the day, little things through the day.
And guess what? Because we're going to close. I love what you're saying, and then I love verbalizing it so that I tell you, I was thinking of you today, and this is what I was thinking about, and that made me feel so grateful. So I want to say I am so grateful that the two of you have come into my life. It's been such a wonderful, wonderful thing, first meeting you, Danyon, having you introduce me to Catherine, and I actually felt myself feeling sad to say goodbye, and I hope that we'll be able to see each other soon, somehow, if you're in New York or I'm on the West Coast, somehow,
we
so that...
We will be in New York in March.
Yes, we will be in New York in March.
All right, then we'll see each other in March.
I look forward to it, Jamie. Thank you so much for this opportunity. We really enjoyed it.
Love having you guys. That's all I have for you now. And remember, speak your heart. Speak your appreciation. Leave no love stone unturned. See you next week on Ask Dr. Love Radio.